There were whole grain waffles for breakfast. Everyone loved Waffle Day at Wilder, save Hope. Waffles and pancakes were never served with syrup or even butter here, but some organic, low-sugar compote made with locally sourced berries. An additional insult was the turkey bacon, a culinary calamity like baked potato chips or cake pops. And finally, the greatest travesty of all, the complete absence of coffee. Wilder only offered flowery, spiced teas, hibiscus, passion flower, rose hips. It tasted like some old lady's potpourri in a cup. Luke made the best waffles in the world. His recipe used yeast, requiring it to rise on the counter overnight. Hope loved waffles on Saturdays, primarily because she enjoyed watching him cook. She would sit in the kitchen on late Friday nights, legs wound around the turquoise stool, glass of wine in hand as he sprinkled yeast over the warm water and melted the butter. If the milk was too hot or the water too cold, the yeast wouldn't proof and the waffles would be lost. Luke would give her this little scientific lecture each time as he stirred milk and butter, sticking his finger in it to test it, prattling on about metabolizing starches and sugars. He never failed to get the temperature exactly right, but Hope was still unduly concerned on those Fridays, sneaking into the kitchen to peek under the dish towel. She would scrutinize the batter's distance from the top of the bowl, receiving a gentle scolding like a child out of bed too many times. But the batter never failed to rise, and the waffles and bacon were always perfect the following morning. Hope customarily woke long before Luke, but never on Waffle Saturdays. On those mornings, Hope would open her eyes to the melody of plates and cutlery tinkling, the glorious smell of coffee and frying bacon floating into the bedroom. She would pad to the bathroom, run a toothbrush a few times over her teeth, wipe the sleep from her eyes, check herself out in the mirror. In those days, looking in the mirror wasn't nearly as disorienting. Then she would tiptoe back to the bed and get in, pretending to be asleep until he came in to wake her. "Wake up, sleeping beauty," he would say. "Breakfast is served." A discordant chime rang, forcing Hope to abandon her reverie and focus on the dining room and Quinn, waving at her like an air traffic controller from a table with Spooky. Quinn frequently chose a different person to eat with, often strong-arming Hope into joining. He called it speed dating. The expansive dining area boasted 25 round tables of various sizes. On warm days, of which there were an abundance in the Coachella Valley, they also opened the patio. While there were never more than 30 residents at Wilder at any given time, they needed all those tables. The vast majority were celebrities who chose to hide behind their Prada shades over any human interaction. At meals, most people ate alone, or when unavoidable, separated at large tables and mutually agreed upon cones of silence. Never Quinn, though. Hope plunked her waffles and fake jam and fake bacon unceremoniously on the table. "Hey, Spooky," she said. "How did you sleep?" Spooky's black hair brushed against his waffle. "Fine." "He was telling me about his life before Wilder," said Quinn. "Did you know Spooky used to work in a comic book store?" Hope found it surprising Spooky said anything to Quinn. He never said more than three words to her. Yet Quinn did have a gift for making people talk, if only to shut him up. "What store?" Hope cut a tiny piece of waffle. It tasted like fried Play-Doh or the little cakes she used to make in her pink plastic oven baked with a 100-watt bulb. She forced herself to chew and to swallow and to repeat the whole process again. If she didn't eat, an attendant would note it on their tablet. Then Hope would have to explain to Dr. Stark why she wasn't eating, and they'd watch her like a hawk and weigh her every day.